work session in just a moment on Senate Bill 277.
Sure.
Senator Cho.
I move that Senate Bill 277 be reported out of the committee without recommendation as to passage, and that the bill be referred to the Committee on Rules and Elections.
Okay, the motion is to send Senate Bill 277 to the Committee on Rules and Elections without recommendation as to passage. You know, it might be a good idea, Marjorie, just quickly, stated what the, what 277...
Sure, ranking members of the committee, Senate Bill 277 would kind of even the playing field for those people in executive service and managerial service, and clearly define who's executive at will, who's managerial, and has property rights to their position. We heard this on February 11th, which was long ago and far away, and we've been requested by staff.
John Yonker. Is there any discussion?
I have no objection, but
no objection.
I do think that we're just as capable of acting on some of these things as the Rules Committee is. I sometimes regret that we don't make these decisions.
We should, I guess.
Sure, Duncan, members of the committee, when a testimony was given, you have the Kennedy, Jean Edwards, and there was some discussion about the Employment Relations Board and what everybody was thinking about the bill. And I know that there was some issues that needed to be discussed, and Dan Kennedy certainly worked with Jean Edwards and the ERB and their time. And they'd like to continue to work on this issue.
We'd be happy to keep it, but it's the timeline. Yes. Okay. Any other discussion? Clerk will call the roll.
Senator
Shields.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries. Senate Bill 277 will be reported out without recommendation. As to passage, will be referred to Committee on Rules. I'm going to open a public hearing. Is Senator Brown coming? Okay. Open a public hearing on Senate Bill Number 15. Yes,
Chair Duncan, members of the committee, Senate Joint Memorial 15 urges Congress to pay obligations of the United States to the United Nations. It's a priority bill for Senator Brown.
Good afternoon. Gina, do you want
to? Yeah. Good afternoon. Thank you, Chair Duncan, and members of the committee for hearing this bill. My name is Gina Isom. I'm the legislative assistant for Senator Brown, who I'm testifying on her behalf. I have given your committee administrator copies of a bipartisan letter in support by former secretaries of state, and we are asking for your support on this bill. Currently, the United States is the largest debtor to the United Nations and owes more than $1 billion in arrears. Former secretaries signing the letter include Henry Kissinger, Cyrus Vance, Alexander Haig, George Shultz, James Baker, Lawrence Eagleburger, and Warren Christopher. And to quote from their letter, "We are deeply concerned that our great nation is squandering its moral authority. It's simply unacceptable that the richest nation on earth is also the biggest debtor to the UN." We ask for your support on this bill, and again, want to thank Chair Duncan for giving us a hearing and ask for your support on the bill.
Thank you very much. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. My name is Betsy Bergstein. I'm here today representing the Better World Fund. The Better World Fund was established in 1997 to raise awareness within the United States of the role of the UN, and one of its primary goals is to get the arrears dues paid to the UN and to have Congress pass those, pass legislation to do that. There has been, within the last 2 months, legislation introduced to pay a portion of our dues. And this joint resolution encouraging our congressional delegation to vote in favor of that would help that legislation in Congress pass very much. We have, just for your information, been in contact with Senator Gordon Smith, and he supports this issue. He supports the UN, and he supports the United States paying its arrears dues. So the organization that I'm associated with is working in 18 states to establish support sort of from the ground up for the UN and raise awareness of what this organization does in the world. Thank you very much.
Okay, good afternoon. Are there any other questions?
Yeah.
That's your issue. Yes.
I just wonder, it's just phenomenal to me. What other country has even given close to the kind of money you've given to the UN?
The United States is definitely the largest contributor, but when we don't pay our dues, those other countries are owed money by the UN that the UN can't pay. So it does have a ripple effect in our relationship with other countries when we don't pay our dues to the UN.
Okay. There's so many issues. I can't remember this moment. Why? What's the protest? Why don't they want to pay them? What are they protesting?
There was political issues between Congress and the administration around issues of efficiency of the UN, the number of staff people they had, how they operated, some issues around family planning in developing countries, and so the dues got held up on those political issues. And I think what people are saying is those issues should be dealt with separately, and we should go ahead and pay our dues. And one of the risks is, and I say it, but it probably isn't very likely it will happen, but if you fall more than 2 years behind in paying your dues to the UN, you can lose your seat in the General Assembly. And at the end of fiscal year 2000, we will be 2 years behind.
So they could lose their whole building. That's right, in New York.
Yeah.
They want to take away our
yeah.
seat.
Right.
But what I
so what the answer to your yeah. question is the dues were held up because there were political disagreements over different issues.
Was it family planning in that?
That was one of the issues, I believe, yeah.
Well, I am opposed to this because it's coming back to me, and I agree with the people that the UN should be out of that business, the forced abortions and all of that.
I don't believe they were involved in abortions. I mean, I can't talk very knowledgeably on it. I just know that they were they.
Mm-hmm.
Any other questions, Mr. Chair? Thank you.
How much is the total amount we owe to the UN?
I think it's $1.3 billion.
Mr. Chair, we have tremendous influence in the UN, and the UN has often served us very well in a lot of diplomatic disputes that would really get a lot worse if it hadn't been for the UN and what it does. And it seems to me that we made a commitment to the UN. We ought to pay our dues. We ought to be upfront. We have issues with the UN. We ought to deal with those separately from the dues, which are our obligation. It's our good word that we're not honoring. And if we don't honor our good word toward the UN, then other nations will not be supportive either. And,
totally right.
So it seems to me that this is a very fine resolution, and we ought to support it.
Well, there.
I forgot. May I ask one more thing?
Okay.
What about Ted Turner? I thought he was going to pick this up.
He thought he was going to pick up the dues.
Mm-hmm.
Ted Turner is involved in the Better World Fund and the United Nations Foundation, mm-hmm. and that is where his money is going.
It's what?
That's where his funding is going, towards those two organizations.
I thought he was going to pay the debt if some of those countries allowed his cable service to come in without franchise fee, et cetera.
I don't know. I'm sorry. I don't know anything about that.
There was some talk of Ted Turner at one time just going ahead and picking this up as a taxpayer of the United States and then potentially turning around and having some litigation against the U.S. As would be any taxpayer's right. However, he felt that, and this is my understanding of the situation, that to do more of a grassroots effort and show a broad base of support for the United States paying its arrears to the UN all across the nation would be a better way to handle the situation. And so that's why we bring the memorial to support today.
And Chair,
yes.
Until we know why Congress is taking this stand, I don't think that it's, you don't know the truth, both sides of the issue. And just to say they're not paying their bills for it, there would be no UN without the United States. It's, I think we need to know both sides of this issue.
Yes, Senator Lennon.
How do they come up with the rate of the Jews? By the population or by the national gross product? Or what's the formula? I hope it's by the population, then the China might have to pay a high
price. I don't know, but I can find out for you. I will definitely find out and get that information for you.
Well, Mr. Chair, there's been a long time agreement about the dues, and we understand what the due schedules are, and it seems to me that it's really a terrible mistake that we haven't continued to honor our commitments to pay the dues to the United Nations. And so I'm hoping we're going to act on this.
We don't have a work session scheduled. We don't have permission for one at this point. We could possibly check.
You don't have to get a permission even for a work session?
Well, I'm trying to think so at this point. I think we threw this one in there after asking for Senator Brown.
Where was it all the time?
It came after the deadline. Sure, Dr. Miller was the
deadline. I think she just asked for permission for a... I think she only asked for a public hearing.
She didn't want a work session?
She simply submitted the bill. Excuse me, Chair Duncan, Senator Char. She submitted the bill, which came to her at a request from the Better World Fund, and Ms. Bergstein stepped into it a little later in the game and just now has processed it through, and we were grateful to have the opportunity to have a hearing. I don't believe there was a discussion one way or the other as to whether or not.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, recognizing the sensitivities of other folks, I do find it interesting that it is at least not a partisan issue with seven secretaries of state on this sheet of paper that we have in front of us. Five of those seven come from the Nixon, Reagan, and Bush administrations. And all seven are asking that we pay our dues just because that's part of
I can assure you from this committee standpoint, I mean, from my standpoint, it's not a partisan because I support it too. But I will check on opposition about work sessions.
Okay. Well, they're subject to rules.
They can have a
rule. Thank you.
Okay. Anyone, any other questions?
I have some more information I can leave with your committee that lists the people that are supporting this resolution, kind of the business community and the faith community throughout the United States that is supporting this.
Now maybe you could get Senator Shannon more information about
okay.
There's
also a website if you're interested in it, betterworldfund.org, that has the most recent information.
Okay, that's it. We'll get that. Okay, we're going to close the public hearing on Senate Joint Memorial 15 and open a public hearing on House Joint Memorial 12. Wait, 12. Is that? You're here for that one, right? Excuse me. I think I will close the public hearing on St. John Memorial 15 and open I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2884A and Representative Chair. Thank you very much for joining us, Jeff.
Thank you, Senator Duncan. Thank you for hearing House Bill 2884. There should be before you some A3 amendments to the bill.
Mm-hmm.
And what this bill does is ask the OLCC to it's an investigation into internet alcohol sales and how easy it is to deliver alcohol to minors in the state of Oregon. It direct sales of alcohol to minors by long-distance technology, I think, is a growing problem. Youngsters today are very technologically astute. They can get on the web. If you do a search, surf over to Yahoo or also this and do a search, and before you know it, you've found a vendor who would be happy to sell you whatever you'd like. My 16-year-old daughter received a credit card application in the mail. And so it's no trick to find the tools necessary to order whatever you choose. Under the Oregon National Constitution, Oregon has the authority to regulate alcohol sales within its borders. This bill would not have any effect on legal shipments of alcohol. Our wine industry or others who ship alcohol or wine directly to consumers. The current law, I think, allows 2 cases per month to be purchased in that manner. But there are individuals out there who are less than ethical and shipping alcohol in boxes labeled books or other kinds of items. And completely outside current law. And this bill would simply direct OLCC to make a minimal effort to identify individuals who are shipping wine or alcohol into the state in that fashion, who are not licensed by OLCC in states that do not have reciprocal agreements with Oregon. And the A3 amendments, I had requested an amendment that would sunset the bill after 2 years and require the OLCC to report to the legislature what they were able to come up with through their efforts, what kind of problems they were able to identify. They do have a file full of complaints from parents and others about alcohol being available in this manner. But it was the legislative council's opinion that due to the low dollar figure and the one-time appropriation of $45,000 that we didn't need to sunset it, but language requiring the report back to the legislature would be appropriate, and so that is the A3 amendments, and I believe this bill doesn't have a referral to Ways and Means.
Okay. Bart Richardson, do you want to come up and join for the State Assembly? Do you have any comments?
Sure, Duncan, member of the committee for the record, Barb Richardson from the Liquor Commission. The commission is always interested in, number one, the revenue issues. If there are people out there that are not paying proper taxes, this is probably of some concern to you all. Certainly from a regulatory and public safety point of view, the commission is very interested in being sure that minors are not able to access alcohol through the Internet as well as visibly intoxicated people. The bill doesn't go very far. Other states who have tried to do something strong in the area of Internet sales have found that they have a great deal of trouble with extradition. I think this will probably end up being solved at the national level. Our commissioners next week are going to be at the National Alcohol Beverage Association meeting, and it is a primary topic of conversation there. And we may know something more in a year or so. This appropriation will give the commission an ability to do some studies to identify where who is sending some of these things via Internet. We can intercept them. We can look to see whether or not the common carriers are following in the kinds of procedures that they're supposed to. They are supposed to deliver in person. They are supposed to be sure that the person they're delivering to is 21 years of age or older. So this will give us an opportunity to collect some information that may be of use to the legislature in 2 years. So we're very happy to coordinate and cooperate with Representative Simmons.
Thank you. Are there questions for Representative Simmons?
Yes,
for them.
Is this strictly for the information gathering, or after we find out the information, how could we stop them from coming from out of the state?
Chair Duncan, Senator Lim, there has been at least one round of hearings in Washington, D.C. about the interstate commerce issues. What I envision is attempts to purchase and contacting both regulatory agencies in states that where we find someone who is very willing to ship in illegally. and trying to encourage enforcement in the states where these wholesalers currently reside, these distributors or sellers of alcohol currently reside. And there certainly is not funding or to do extradition in this bill. And I think some of those issues with interstate commerce have to work out at the national level before we can proceed down that line. But I think it would help us, as things move along in Washington, D.C., this will help us get us information that will help us with enforcement in this area in the future.
You suggested follow-up. Not only we are looking at the other states, we have our own law in our state. When I was serving as a member of the Division of Consumer Affairs in 1993, we passed some of the bills so we can ship out some of the products to other states, do their mail order, and many other things. And I think we have an internal problem in our state.
Senator Duncan, could I add one thing, Senator Lim? We have done a couple of set up a couple of stings in this area, and we've found that when we do this, it's really a matter of education. Some of the people that don't live in Oregon, that are in this business, don't understand that we do have laws against this. And once we have contacted them and talked with them about how our laws work, they have quit sending to us. So sometimes it's just a matter of making the contact, getting them up to speed on how we do business here, and we've had some very good results that way.
Yeah, a couple little questions kind of come to my mind, and the first one has to do with how much volume is there, or do you have any guess as to how much volume now flows through this kind of internet pipeline?
It seems in my digging through this and getting information about this, we had a number nationally that was close to around $1 billion. It's a significant amount of revenue. And so how much that is pouring into Oregon, I really can't tell you. It's still spirits are illegal to ship into Oregon in any event.
Right.
Wine, through reciprocal agreements with Oregon and California and a number of other states, we have reciprocal agreements so you can ship wine. But the still spirits or beer...
Well, usually we are 1%
of
everything across the country in terms of block grants and everything, we end up being the 1%. So we're probably 1% of that billion as well. The other question I have is, and excuse me for just being so blunt, but I don't understand the minority report that I noticed. Did they just disagree with the 45,000 and what only 5,000 spent on the project? Or?
Well, Mr. Chair, Senator Shields, this bill initially was perceived by some that was not intended to shut down licensed OLCC shipments of wine within Oregon or without Oregon, and generated a significant amount of interest from some wine wholesalers and vintners and individuals. There was an exception in the bill, but you had to have a pile of ORSs except for this ORS site and this ORS site, which is what allowed the wine people to stay in business. So there was a lot of consternation, and it got caught in a bit of a train wreck in committee. But you're astute to notice that it was just the dollar figure is all that was different on the minority report.
Yeah, that was the only difference I could see.
Yeah, it was the only difference.
It probably doesn't make sense to send this to Ways and Means. Senator Lim and I are on a committee that have been dealing with the OLCC budget in Ways and Means subcommittee. It seems to me that the OLCC has regulatory authority, I would think, even to look into this right now without this bill. I know they're concerned about it. You just indicated that your commissioners are going to a national meeting to talk about all of this thing.
I don't know whether we need to appropriate money or we could do it with a budget note, maybe even, which would direct them to investigate and look into it. It doesn't make sense to spend a lot of money if the problem really needs a national solution and you can get it nationally in some way.
Your point is well taken. It doesn't make sense to just spend a lot of money if in order to prosecute, we need some resolution to extradition laws and such. And that's why we have...
If you want to spend the money on investigation, and maybe we need more investigation, and maybe that takes more money, that I don't know. We need to hear from the agency about that. But I think a budget note, we're about the business of establishing the amount of money the agency will have in the subcommittee. Senator Lemon, I aren't chair of the subcommittee. If you know who the chair is, you could talk to him about it.
Other questions?
Senator Duncan. Senator Crowe, we did talk with the co-chairs this morning. Representative Lewis indicated that she thought this could be part of a budget note. And I don't know that she necessarily meant it shouldn't go to Ways and Means, but that it would be part of our budget issues that would be talked about in committee, and that we were being asked to do some additional things, and there was a recognition that it would cost a little more to do that.
I think we should send it on without recommendation to Ways and Means, and then with the idea that there's an issue here that needs to be dealt with in the subcommittee, and then see what happens, and be up to the leadership in Ways and Means if they want to spend some general fund money on it. I think you're right, the problem needs to be dealt with.
Are there other questions at this point? If not, I'm going to close the public hearing and open a work session on House Bill 2884.
Chair, I move House Bill 2884, the Ways and Means without recommendation.
Okay. Senator Troll moves. We have the amendment.
Dash-3
amendment. Okay.
Chair, I move the Dash-3.
Senator Troll moves the Dash-3 amendment. Is there any objection? Dash-3 amendments are adopted.
Chair, I move House Bill 2884, the full Ways and Means Committee without recommendation.
Okay, House Bill 2884 will be sent to the full Ways and Means Committee without recommendation.
We should have sent with recommendation because the Ways and Means Committee without recommendation.
The motion you have right now is without recommendation.
Except a discussion point, that's
right. Right.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know whether I want to recommend it or not from the standpoint of the appropriation. That's my problem. I think it's a problem that needs to be attended to. I think it can be attended to without an appropriation of the budget. That's why. And so that's why I would send it without recommendation. And they can decide. They'll probably decide anyway.
My point is to the rule is that as long as it's on the $50,000, you could, it's up to the co-chair whether they want to pass it with or without the investigation. That has to be the rule. So far.
Just
goes out of line.
It does. This does have a subsequent referral.
The chair, I'll move it with recommendations.
Okay, Senator Crowe moves it with DuPass recommendation to the House Bill 2884 as amended to the Full Ways and Means Committee with DuPass recommendation. Any other discussion?
I don't quite understand what you're doing in your change of recommendation.
Wants it to go with a DuPass recommendation. And I said that I would honor his wish and change my motion. My motion is
the way it means. Since the two of them are two votes from the Ways and Means Committee,
okay. Fight there, not here.
All right.
Yeah,
please do it there. Okay. Please to call the roll.
My comment is get out of the way and let the Ways and Means do whatever they want to do.
Yeah. They will. All right.
All right.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries. House Bill 2884 as amended will be sent to Ways and Means. Let's do pass recommendation.
Okay, thank you very much.
As I understand it, you was also on testify on House Joint Memorial 12. No, wait. On House Concurrent Resolution 7A. Chief Justice?
Yes, I'd be happy to.
I'm going to open a public hearing on House Concurrent Resolution 7A.
Thank you very much, Senator.
Yeah, Senator Simmons. I mean, it's nice to have you here.
Yes, my name is for the record, and I think I failed to, on the last bill, introduce myself for the record, but maybe this will suffice. I'm Senator Mark Simmons from North Dakota, 58. And the bill before you is a request for the Confederated Tribes of the Umatilla Indian Reservation. They felt it would be appropriate to recognize the Nez Perce Indians, and specifically Chief Joseph, who in the late 1800s led his tribe in what was the last conflict, to my knowledge, between the white men and the Indians in North America, and attempted to flee to Canada and freedom there. And he was one of the original Americans, and I don't have any qualms at all about suggesting that we recognize him in this manner. I believe Senator Nelson is a co-sponsor on that with me.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I might just comment, one of the most interesting evenings I ever spent was when Erskine Wood, Jr., who was, I think, 99 at the time, Sunday evening talking about his days with Chief Joseph. And his father, if you may recall, was the young lieutenant who was with General Howard at the surrender, and his father is the one who copied the surrender message from Chief Joseph. So because of that, we have that surrender message today, which is a beautiful, beautiful...
Oh, that thing was beautiful.
Yeah, it's a beautiful truth. But the thing that was very interesting, his father became very close to Chief Joseph, and he wanted his son, Erskine Wood Jr., who was speaking to us at age 99, to learn some of the ways of the Indians. And so he used to go spend time living in the teepee with Chief Joseph. And it was interesting to think of a historical figure like that. And here I'm standing there talking, listening to a man who had known Chief Joseph. And that tells you something else. Close as you can be sometimes.
Either that.
It sounds like he was a fascinating man.
It either tells us how close to history.
Okay.
Or how old you are.
Senator, I wasn't leading into that at all.
Uh-huh.
Are there any other questions for Representative Simmons? Oh, yeah, something else to testify. Anything else for Representative Simmons? Okay. Did you want to also testify on House Joint Memorial 12?
I'd be happy to.
I'm going to close the work session on the public hearing on Health Memorial Resolution 7A momentarily. I'll come back to it. And I'm going to open a public hearing on House Joint Memorial 12. Representative Simmons.
Thank you very much, Senator.
You're our agenda this afternoon.
Representative Mark Simmons, I do appreciate you hearing the bill, Senator, very much. This is another resolution. I believe this has to do with the rebuilding of Salilo Falls. We are approaching the 200th anniversary of the Lewis and Clark expedition, and the Salilo Falls village, which was originally underwater, it is now, the original site is underwater, it's been moved. Just the flooding of the area behind the Dow Dam. And we thought it would be appropriate, again, as requested, the Confederated Tribes of the Umatilla Indian Reservation to encourage the federal funding to help rebuild that village. I understand there is some money available, and this is an effort to support their efforts to obtain some funding for that purpose.
Questions for Representative Simmons?
Sure. You were really asking Congress to appropriate necessary funds in the sense that we appropriate here or actually pass an appropriation measure, or are you saying that it's
that there are funds there that just simply can be already appropriated that are available.
Senator Duncan, Chair Duncan, and Senator Tro, most of the work on this is done by my staff, and they've called in sick today. It's my understanding that there are some funds available that could be appropriated to this cause, this purpose. And we did have some interaction with our senators in Washington, D.C. about this previous to introducing the memorial.
Are they satisfied with the wording?
Yes.
Any other questions? Okay. I think what I'll do is move to Angela Morrison, if you want to come on up. And she wants to testify. You're welcome to stay representing. Did you have anything else to say, ma'am?
I'm prepared for the break.
Okay. Thank you very much for joining us. Okay. Good afternoon. Welcome to the committee.
Good afternoon. I'm a little bit nervous here.
Oh, this is a very
common this is my, yeah. my
Representative Simmons says it's really in good form.
I hope so. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Angela Morris, and I'm before you today on behalf of the requesters of House Joint Memorial 12, the Confederated Tribes of the Mitchell Indian Reservation. I'll begin by briefly explaining why we are requesting this legislation. The reason is twofold. First, the more technical aspect of our reason. The property that Sorella Village is located on is federally owned and managed by the Bureau of Indian Affairs. The Congressional Act set aside this land stated that it was to be for the use and benefit of the Umatilla, Yakima, and Warm Springs Indian tribes. Currently, the Portland Area Office of the Bureau of Indian Affairs is responsible for the upkeep of the property. Together, the Bureau and the three tribes are working toward the goal of restoring the village to what it was intended to be, a sacred fishing, trading, and gathering center for the three tribes. Lines 12 and 13 of this memorial state that the Confederated Tribes of the Umatilla Indian Reservation have prepared a detailed inventory of existing buildings and a preliminary plan for replacement and refurbishing. I have with me a copy of the results of the study that was performed by our tribal planning office. Attached to my testimony are the pages of the report on the conditions of the village as it presently exists. So to make your perusal of the information easier, I placed a star next to the passages that exemplify what life is like today at Sorella Village. I also attached an outline of the plan currently being worked on. This should answer any questions you may have about the cost of the project. As you will see, after each of the major elements needed for the renovations is an estimated cost. On the second page of the report, figure 3, there is also a summary of the total cost estimate. When talking to one of the Confederated Tribe of Umatilla Indian Reservation's planners working on the project, I inquired as to what the approximate timeline would be once the project is funded. He explained to me that they hope to have everything completed well before the year 2005. I was somewhat puzzled by the date until he explained further. This region is expecting a large number of people from around the world to visit during the year 2005, which will be the 200th anniversary of the Lewis and Clark expedition. On October 27, 1805, Sorella Falls is mentioned in the journals from the expedition. For those who will be following the path the explorers took 200 years ago, this will be a place to stop and visit. However, in its current condition, the village would be an embarrassment to the region. Once restored, however, it will be with open arms and pride that the residents of Sorella Village are able to welcome visitors. This brings me to the second aspect of our reason for requesting this legislation. Lines 11 and 12 of the memorial point out the commitment the Confederated Tribes of the Umatilla Indian Reservation have made to the occupants of the Sorella Village, also known as the River People. In talking with members of the tribe, it's apparent that many, if not all, tribal members have some connection to the village, be it through a friend or relative currently residing there, a family member that once lived, fished, or traded there, or through the stories that are passed down to the generations about the glorious village that once was. Both because of the tremendous impact this village had on the region and the sentimental history of Sorella Village, the thought that it may be restored has brought much joy to those that remember it so fondly. For all of these reasons and more, I strongly urge your support in the passage of HKM 12.
Good, thank you very much. Questions for Ms. Morris?
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Senator.
In the 1956, there has been a flood in that area, and the wind will reduce it, where it had a season upon a flood again, so it's totally devastated.
Mr. Chair, Senator Lim, I don't know my history probably as well as I said, but I believe that the site is actually in the middle of the river now. It is, was flooded on purpose. It wasn't an act of nature.
Yeah.
And now it's put to the side, and I don't believe it's in at risk.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you're asking, I think the number here around the $5 million?
Approximately, yes.
To the Congress, are we asking for this money, or where do we get this money?
I believe there, as Representative Simmons stated, that there is some federal money available, a couple of different options for where that might come from. I'm sorry, Mr. Chair.
Sure.
Yes, thank you, Chair.
When we carry this on floor, you might get asked, you know, where is this money going to come from? And if there are some options that are available, could you let us know what they are so we have specific information?
Yes. Absolutely.
And I just don't see it in here in this way.
Other questions for Ms. Lewis? If not, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Joint Memorial 12. But I think I'll open a work session on House Joint Memorial 12.
What's your desire, Mr. Chair?
Well, I think I would like to send it to, the floor. With a due pass, but, you know, I don't know what funds are available. I think, as Mr. Cho has mentioned, we would need to know not only for special funds through the Bureau of Indian Affairs that might be up the line. This just puts it in motion. I guess this just gives the groups some support, is what I'm seeing. And then you're on your own.
Pretty much.
Well, it's a nice position to be in.
I'd move it to the floor that we pass recommendation, Mr. Chair.
Senator Shields moves House Joint Memorial 12 to the floor that they do pass recommendation.
Discussion? I'd just like to comment that I've had an interest. Earlier I was talking to Representative Simmons about the Nez Perce and being out at the site where that quote is at the end of the lake, at Wallawa Lake, if you've been to that site. And I lived on the old Klamath Reservation for 3 years during my ministry. And I really want to be supportive of this effort. I think it's part of what we need to be doing as a nation to make right some of what we've done wrong. For so cotton picking wrong, if you want stories that will curl your hair, just get into a conversation about the injustices surrounding the termination of the Klamath Indian tribe in Southern Oregon.
Oh, yes.
In one of my congregations, I actually had a member of the Bureau of Indian Affairs, a member of my congregation, described just out and out illegalities with regard to that termination. And when you've got BIA people themselves that will say that, it makes you wonder, you know. So this is just one of many kinds of steps that need to be taken. I just wanted to be on record and saying that.
Thank you very much, Senator. I remember speaking of age again, as you often mentioned, Senator.
Yes.
But I do remember as a kid driving up and down there, and remember the Indian fishing out over the, you know, it was interesting.
Was this a car you drove, or was it a...
I think we're ready to call the roll. The first call of the roll.
Aye. Senator Shields.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Yes, you have to carry the bill. Right. Motion carries. House Joint Memorial 12 will be sent to the floor with a due pass recommendation, and Senator Shields will carry the bill. Moving to reopen the public hearing on House Concurrent Resolution 7A. Angela Morris, again.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee.
It wasn't so bad last time, was it?
So, I'm a pro now. Again, my name is Angela Morse, for the record. Before I say, again, on the behalf of the requesters of this resolution, the continued trust of the Uniqlo Indian Reservation. This resolution simply puts on record an acknowledgement of the role Chief Joseph and the Nez Perce play in Oregon's history, the valiant and courageous efforts to protect their land they called home, as well as the unwillingness to give up on something they believed in so strongly to be greatly admired. If this resolution does indeed survive the legislative process, a copy of the final version will be presented to the Nez Perce tribes, the Confederated Tribes of the Umatilla Indian Reservation, the Confederated Tribes of the Colville Reservation, the Confederated Tribes of the Warm Springs Reservation, and Jefferson, Umatilla, Union, and Loyola counties. There are many descendants of the heroic Nez Perce still among us, and this would be a fitting way to show our admiration. I urge your support in the passage of House Concurrent Resolution 7A.
Any questions for Ms. Morris?
Sure.
Yes, sir.
I'm going to move that we send it forward for due pass. I just wish it was a little stronger written, especially in the resolution part of this. I think we could have said more rather than what we're saying. But for recognizing and honoring Chief Joseph, got a lot of good things in the whereas, and so that's fine. But,
Mr. Chair, if you have a historian sitting here who says that we could make this stronger, why don't we? I don't understand.
Would you like to do something
for me? Well, yeah, to rewrite it, and what I tried to find out was whether they were pleased with the language, and
Mr.
I think
Chair?
They are.
Senator Chair, yes, our original submission to legislative council probably was worded a little bit more strongly, but this is what we were given, so this is what we've been going forward with. Pardon me?
What did you start with? Do you have the original language?
I have a handwritten copy of Mr. Roger Martin's version of what it should have been up here in place of. If you'd like to see it, I can certainly give you a copy.
Okay. You're okay with it as it is.
Sure, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Concurrent Resolution 7, and I'll open a work session on House Concurrent Resolution 7.
Chair, I move that we send it to the floor for due pass recommendation.
Senator Patrol moves the House Concurrent Resolution 7 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. And I would think that we probably should check with Senator Nelson if he would have to carry the bill.
That's the thing, if you begin to tamper with it.
Yeah.
Pass the House already in this form.
I think you're right.
Problems to get in.
The American camp. All right. Any other discussion? Okay, let's call the roll.
Senator
Lynn.
Aye.
Senator
Schultz.
Aye.
Senator Crow.
Aye.
Senator Lynn. Aye. House Concurrent Resolution 7 will be sent to the floor. We'll do pass recommendation. We'll ask Senator Nelson if he will carry the bill.
Mr. Chair.
Work session.
Mr. Chair. Before
Angela
leaves, if Senator Nelson wants to carry both bills, I don't want to get in the way of that. Do you have any feel for that?
We'll have Marjorie check with that.
Okay.
If he wants to carry the other one.
For instance, if he wants to carry both, or if he wants to carry the one in Tulalip, which would be closer to him, I'd be glad to carry the Nez Perce, which is farther east.
Well, that's his town. That's his district, though.
So. Okay.
Yeah. But why don't we'll ask Marjorie check with Senator Nelson and see what he wants to do. Okay? Okay, we'll do that. All right, now going to move to our public hearing on House Bill 2892. And Michael Mills, you want to come up, do you want to explain what this bill is?
Chair Duncan, members of the committee, House Bill 2892A has been through the process on the House side, including cuts to revenue, I believe it was. And this bill was recreated the OLCC. It creates four broad categories of retail alcoholic beverage licenses to be issued by OLCC and a variety of other issues. But, yeah.
Why don't we ask Barb?
I'm going to go
find it. Out of the room, Chair Duncan.
Oh, okay.
We'd agreed we were going to walk up there together.
Right.
If she wasn't here, I walked up on my own.
Right. We might be good to have her. We'll take just a second that she's not far away. We do that. When we see someone leave a room, we immediately call their bill up.
Yep.
she was tired of waiting until she knew that.
She knows our system, don't she? It sure speeds it up. Barb, come up and join us.
Mr. Chair, I apologize.
That's all right.
For the record, jump right into this. Barb Hutchison representing the Liquor Commission, and actually I would like to ask Chris Hansen on our staff to join us at the table.
Okay.
He's the guy that really has the facts if you decide to ask any tough questions.
Okay.
Shall I just dive in?
Yes, go right ahead.
Just a little history.
Yeah, you've talked to most all of us, I think.
Well, most of the members know about this.
Right. Okay, so just if you want to just summarize it.
Yes, I'd be happy to do that, Senator Duncan. This bill comes to you as a result of last session Senate Bill 300 that asked the commission to bring together a task force to look at simplifying our licensing system that has gotten quite complex over the years. I think we have found that people have become very innovative as needs have changed, and they've added one kind of license on top of another kind of license. So we brought together representatives of the Grocery Association, the Restaurant Association, the Chiefs of Police, local governments, the League of Oregon Cities, the beer and wine distributors. I'm sure I'm forgetting some very important people. At any rate, really anybody that had a stake in our licensing system was involved in this task force. The task force recommended that we reduce the number of licenses that we have from 36 to 6. Was that the initial ones? Or 8? 6. I think it was 6. In putting together the legislation, staff found that dealing with all of the licenses at once was really far too complex. And so what we did is we concentrated this session on the retail licenses, and we will look at the remaining licenses in the next biennium. This bill comes to you with the full support of the task force. It simplifies the way we do our licensing. It helps local governments in that they can now put their resources to look at problem establishments instead of having to be involved in the renewal application of every single license out there. There are 8,000 of them. So they will be able to, along with us, put their resources where there are problems. This will make it easier for licensees to go through our process. It's easier for the public to understand. So we have consolidated. We have made a few changes in the fees. You'll notice on one sheet that the package store license was $50 in 1933. In 1999, it's still $50. So we've made a couple of adjustments. The fee increase will amount to maybe $500,000, I think, is all overall. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Sure.
Thank you, sir.
These fees have been through some committees on the House side, right?
Senator Duncan, Senator Crowe, yes. It went to the General Government Committee, passed out of there with the full support. The one big issue that was raised in general government as well as on the House floor had to do with lottery and whether or not anything here would mean we'd have more lottery. The answer to that is no. Lottery Commission put together some amendments that will be sure that does not happen.
Were there changes in the fee levels?
Mr. Chair, Senator Troll, no, there were none. And this bill passed 58-0 on the House floor.
Is there opposition out there among those who are paying the fees, paying these fees?
Mr. Chair, Senator Crow, not to my knowledge.
Okay. Any need to change this bill in any way? We have an amendment, don't we?
Mr. Chair, Senator Crow, I'll let Councilor Mills address that issue. The commission doesn't have a problem with what they are proposing.
Is this some special thing that's being added in this amendment to the bill?
Mr. Chair, Senator Crow, that's correct.
Okay. Why wasn't it in the original bill?
Senator Crow, because it really wasn't one of our issues. It kind of came up after the fact, and the Restaurant Association asked us whether or not we had any problem with it. We did not, and so we said we didn't mind that they attached this to our license bill.
Okay, so you're comfortable with it. Whatever, I don't know what it is yet, but you're comfortable
with it. I'll let Mr. Mills explain it to you.
Thank you, Chairman Duncan, members of the committee, other guests, and members of the staff. My name is Michael Mills. I'm a lawyer here in Salem. My address is 715 Commercial Street Northeast, Salem, Oregon 97301. I'm here in two capacities. One is to speak on behalf of the Oregon Restaurant Association, which is a trade association, as you know, in the state of Oregon. Another one is a lawyer in private practice who represents a number of licensees and potential licensees who this bill will affect. And I've been practicing law for close to 26 years now, and this is a tremendous step forward on behalf of both the regulatory agency and the industry to streamline the process, cut bureaucratic and government red tape. There's no heartburn as far as I know that I've heard about any of the fees that are in the bill, the license classifications, et cetera. We have offered, the association has offered the proposed amendment, which you have in front of us today. I think the main reason why it hasn't reached the bill earlier is because there was some talk about getting consensus on it. We think we have consensus on this amendment now in its terms, as far as I understand it. So,
have you checked with the leaders of the House committee that sent this out? Because if it goes back for acceptance concurrence, they may refuse to concur and go to the conference committee if they're not privy to it.
I can't answer that question because I wasn't involved. I did forget to mention that both Mr. Michael McCallum and Bill Perry are unable to be here today, and they asked me to express their apologies for not being able to do that, but I'll make sure that word gets to them.
Chair Duncan, members of the committee, my understanding is that Chair Wilson would probably be agreeable to this amendment if the law CST is approved of it.
Okay. That's good to know. Okay, so so this amendment, well, tell me exactly what it is.
Thank you, Chair Duncan, Senator Trill. Can I give you a little background? There's in our association there and in Oregon in general, as well as the rest of the nation, there's been a growth in the small brew pubs who make the boutique beers, they want to be able to sell it wholesale to other licensees, their product, on a very limited basis. And this idea has been circulating for some time, and I think that in the amendment that we have codifies that so that the small brew pubs of a limited capacity are able to sell their product to other licensees at wholesale. For instance, if Tavern A was a brew pub and had a beer that they wanted to market to another Tavern B, which was not owned by them down the street, they'd be able to do that under the provisions of this bill. It sets very strict limits on the size of the operation, we think is good, and it also allows them to compete in a limited market area, and this is something they wanted.
Yeah, it doesn't, to me, sound like a bad idea, but I'm just wondering if those of you who represent the OLCC have any problem with it opening up the argument that others will want to expand on this and move into this area. The charge inequity or a charge they want to be treated the same, and you open up an artery.
Mr. Chair, Senator Crowe, I'm not sure I can exactly speak to your point. I think that we do know that to get a big distributor to try, a big distributor is not going to stop and pick up 20 barrels from somebody to deliver anywhere. So it makes some sense, it seems to me, in this limited way that they be given an opportunity to kind of expand their market.
You don't see others wanting to use this. Any problems? Do you see any other problems with it in terms of what could happen? No.
One never knows, I guess, is the best answer. But at this point in time, we're pretty comfortable with this.
So right now it's 500 barrels or less. You say it could come back later and be 600, and it does open the door.
I might add one. There was actually a bill that had been submitted that would have allowed this privilege to those who produced 5,000 barrels, and the commission was neutral on that issue, so 500 is certainly palatable.
Any other questions?
So, okay.
If you're wondering,
I'll come back for 5,000 next time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. In case you're wondering, our committee is.
Uh-huh.
We have one had to meet with the governor at 4, and we have another one testifying in hearing room D, who should be in a few moments to vote with us. Are there any other questions right now? Okay, I'm going to close the public hearing on 2892A. I'm going to move to public hearing on House Bill 3429. It's my plan to come back to a work session. So if you would stick around, maybe.
Happy to do that.
On the phone with the Oregonian for about 15 minutes.
Okay.
So we're on the best side,
30 minutes left.
Yeah, we'll just take a minute ago and she's still on. So, at this point, Pat Egan,
yes,
from the Oregon Wine Growers Association, and Eric Hummer.
Hummer,
okay. From Hummer Wines. Good, good. Oh, and we also have
Jeff Lyon, who is an attorney with Dave Correct Tremaine and legal counsel for the Wine Growers Association. Just in case technical questions come up, I think I'm mostly prepared, but yeah.
Good to have you here.
Good to have insurance.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, for the record, my name is Pat Egan. You have my written testimony with me today. Jeff Lyon, as I mentioned, and Eric Honker from Honker Wines. So we'll have
testimony. Jeff's last name again.
Lyon.
L-Y-O-N. L-Y-O-N, that's right. Okay.
Yeah, my written testimony, so I'll keep my comments
brief. Thank you.
Just go through them in outline form. This is a bill that came out of the House Agriculture and Forestry Committee on a 9-0 vote and passed the House itself 56-0. The bill is generally, and this is at OLCC's view, I think, as well, just simply a licensing change bill. Currently, OLCC interprets the law to issue no more than one winery license per production facility. Other states allow more than one winery license per production facility. So for entrepreneurial winemakers, they have the ability to go into a production facility, have a winery license, make the wine themselves personally, and to sell it personally to restaurants and the like on an individual bottle basis. Here in Oregon, young entrepreneurial winemakers don't have the same ability. They basically have to buy the grapes, sell them to the winemaking facility. The winemaking facility then makes the wine, labels it. It's sort of out of the control of people like Mr. Hommaker here. And then at some point they might have the ability to buy it back and then distribute it on a five gallon basis, something like that. This bill would simply allow them to have a winery license and produce like any other winery themselves. And so it would increase their own flexibility. As far as the industry itself goes, it's been a growing industry for the last 10 years. It's grown on a 300% clip, not per year, that's over the last 10 years, and would encourage further growth in that industry. There are a couple of things I'd just like to say about the licensing itself. There is one way where an individual who wanted to make wine could make wine without a winery license, and that's through the grower sales privilege license. If you have your own land and you grow your own grapes, you do have the ability to take those grapes into a production facility and to to make the wine. But if you have a down year, for whatever reason, your crop doesn't come out the way that you like, or you have more orders than you might have expected for your wine, you don't have the ability to go in and personally make the wine. This would change that and will allow the winemaker to go ahead and do that. On a sort of a national level, there are other states, California most notable, I think, among them, that allow this sort of thing. This would put us on an even competitive playing field with California and would also encourage Oregon grapes to stay in Oregon and more production of Oregon wines. we've been pretty diligent in making sure that there's no opposition to this bill. OLCC, as I said, I think considers it just a licensing change. The beer and wine distributors had another conversation with Paul Romaine today. He's fine with it. So we don't have opposition to the bill. Finally, I had a discussion with the chair earlier today about the possibility of an emergency clause. Obviously, if the committee wanted to pass it out today, we would not be in opposition to that, but what we would ask is that we have an opportunity to draft up an amendment that would put an emergency clause into this bill so that people like Mr. Homaker and others that will be producing this season could produce the wine themselves and do it under a winery license that this bill would allow. So there's really no change, I think, as far as OLCC is concerned. It'd be an administrative change. People like Mr. Homaker would just make an application for a winery license as opposed to some other form of a license. And that concludes my testimony. I'll take questions now, but I can save them.
I think, as I recall, on the amendment, you've already talked to the House Chair, too?
Yes, thank you for that. Yes, I talked with Representative Wells, who chairs that committee on the House side, and he said that that would be fine.
Okay. Sure. Homaker.
Hi. Thank you. My name is Eric Homaker. By education and professional experience, I'm a winemaker. I'm here on behalf of the Oregon wine industry to offer testimony and support of House Bill 3429. As Pat said, it has no opposition. It's a pretty simple and straightforward bill, so I'll keep it as short as I can. Prior to starting my own company here in 1995, I was winemaker at Etude Wines in Napa Valley. It was an interesting facility in that there were six independently owned, operated, and bonded wineries operating out of one facility. This was and still is done in California. It's called an alternating premise. It merely means from the alcohol, tobacco, and firearms position is that you have separate and responsible wineries that keep their own books and so on operating in one address. When I came up here in 1995, I had hoped to do the same thing. I was pretty surprised to find out that under Oregon law that was not currently allowed. This obviously has a big impact on a small winery. The capital expense of building a facility or leasing a facility and equipping that facility is pretty high. Looking back to my time at this winery in Napa, two of the six have gone on to build their own wineries. Two more are currently in the process of doing that. What it does is it just lets you get to a producing level earlier. I'm working right now as under a wholesaler's license. What happens is I currently lease 11 different vineyard plots. I'm also working as a consultant on others, which I buy grapes from. Those grapes are then sold to a winery that makes the wine for me. Then I buy the wine back and sell it under my own label. As Pat said, this is basically a kind of a license consolidation issue. Has everyone's support thus far, and I'm here hoping to encourage you to support it also.
Questions? Sure.
Have there been any opposition to this? Anybody? Any of the other wine owners? Or they?
Chairman Duncan, Senator Trow, no, there's been no opposition. Actually, everyone is pretty excited, both large and small wineries.
Okay. And Mr. Chair, Senator Trow, that's true. I've talked with a few other of the larger winemakers. There's another sort of an ancillary benefit to a large production facility in that they do have some downtime, and if you allow more individuals like Mr. Homaker and others who are getting into the industry this ability, they're more likely to use up that production time, say, take a week or some period of time and go in there and produce wine. So, as I said, we have no opposition that we've been able to detect, and I've asked all that I could imagine.
Do other states have similar laws?
Yes, California does, and we've looked at a few others that Jeff and I was looking into this a little bit. California is obviously our main competitor, and as I understand it, and as Eric's experience will attest to, that's their licensing structure.
Yes, sir.
A couple more points along this line. Currently, a winery, a company, a person who's doing, who's in a similar situation to myself, but operating in California, is able to operate as a complete winery with complete privileges, including privileges when they come to Oregon as a winery. They're able to sell small amounts of wine. They're able to pour wine at public tastings. They're able to go to things like the International Pinot Noir Celebration, which is a major trade and public event. As a wholesaler, I'm unable to do those things. Last point was, as Pat mentioned, the possibility of an emergency clause. What this would allow would that any grapes harvested in the 1999 harvest, this September and October, would be harvested and produced under each winery's license, which would completely clean up labeling and licensing, labeling and bookkeeping records for the life of the wine. Currently, if it's produced under one name or one bond and then sold to another winery, which is what would have to happen if I were to be licensed in, say, December, then I would have to change the label. For a small winery like myself, it'd be about a $2,000 change to cover the number of wines that I produce.
Other questions? Okay, well, it sounds very reasonable. It would be a matter of bringing that amendment back.
Okay, and can I work with committee staff to pull it?
Right, we get that. We need to get that added for approval for that. The end of the list approved, so we'll be okay on that. And so we'll see you next Thursday.
Excellent. Thank you, John.
Thank you very much. Oh, Barb.
Oh,
she's done too. He wants to testify.
Thank you.
Thank you. Good luck in the wine business. Are you for or against it?
Oh, let's see. Mr. Chair, Senator Trump, it's getting smaller by the moment.
Yes, it is. But I tell you what, the two of us are determined to stick it out.
That's good. The commission has looked at this, and we've worked very closely with Mr. Egan on this. Our fiscal people have looked at it. There may be a very slight privilege tax reduction as a result, but it's certainly not an enforcement or a regulatory problem. And it does give an opportunity for some of the smaller wineries to become noticed and to put their own labels on those bottles.
So we're okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 5429. Senator Lynn, we're delighted to see you.
Thank you.
That's
here.
We're going to go back. If you agree to just a second, I'm going to open a work session on 2892A.
Sure.
Yes.
And then the A12 amendment.
A12 amendment. Senator Trump moves the A12 amendment. The A12 amendment. Senator Lynn?
Yes.
These allow the small brewery that produces less than 500 to, am I saying right? They can go direct without having to go through a distributor.
I'm familiar.
You're familiar with it. Okay. All right. Are you ready to have?
Yes, sir.
A12 amendments are adopted. Senator Trolley?
I move the House Bill 2892 as amended to the floor.
House Bill 2892 as amended and moved to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
I would like to carry it.
All right. Senator Trolley will carry it. The clerk will call the roll.
Senator
Duncan? Aye. Motion carried. House Bill 2892 as amended will be sent to the floor with a due pass recommendation. I believe that, just for your information, this committee will not meet next Tuesday. I'm going to be doing that migrant tour with Secretary Steele and the governor. We will meet on Thursday, or next Thursday, a week from today. This is our last meeting. And we do have the the racing bills, and like most of the people are together, we understand. They should be coming in here with a finalized bill for us that day. And other things should move rather rapidly. But since today's our last day, I'm going to ask if committee members would be willing to stick it out until we get through that agenda that day.
Sure.
On Thursday next week. And we should be done. And we really are doing very well. I'd like to commend the committee for its work.
Doing
great. And, well, and a good administrator here. We've been a great shape. Staff. Salary keeps us going. That's true. Okay, I think on that basis, I'm going to close the meeting for the general government committee today.